You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Last night, ladies and gentlemen, I had 1 hour in an attempt to impart to you an awful lot of information about the coming year and years. And of course, an hour isn't enough, so tonight I will continue with that conversation. Last night I gave you most of the bad news. Tonight I will elaborate a little bit on why that is so, and then I will give you as much of the good news as I possibly can. I encourage you to have pen and paper by your side and take notes. And ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to understand all that I said last night or all that I am going to say tonight without an awful lot of soul searching, a lot of confrontation with reality personally, and a lot of deep thought. And I encourage you to discuss these matters with your family members and with those whom you trust. Ladies and gentlemen, the faxes have been flying furiously today. Many questioning some of the statements that I made last night. And before I get into a lot of the good news, I want to clarify a few points for you. Try to make you understand what it was that I said and why I said it. And bear in mind that you do not have access to the information to which I am privy on a daily basis. If you take issue with the statement that we're not going to go back to the Constitution as it always has been in its present form as the supreme law of the land, then I ask you to take a few moments to consider some of these facts. Number one, the Constitution was written by probably some of the greatest geniuses who have ever lived upon this earth. In their time, they were considered to be extreme left-wing, radical revolutionaries, traitors against the government of England. Most Americans have never confronted that fact. What they did was pen a document that, for the first time in the history of the human race, set man free, made him a king in his own right, and established a government that was his chattel servant, provided the kings supervised correctly, were in fact the watchdogs, practiced what our founders called eternal vigilance. Our founding fathers were also probably the most astute at understanding human nature in its most basic forms. I have read the works of many of the most brilliant minds that the world has ever produced during my lifetime, but I have never read any works from anyone other than the founders of this country who truly understood the nature of the human animal. I believe that they knew in their hearts what would ultimately happen, that we would trade our liberties under responsibility, our freedoms, our creator-endowed rights protected by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights for some sort of security or benevolence, or to bring it down to the very reality of the situation, would accept the dole from the government rather than take the risks and responsibilities associated with freedom and liberty. They understood this only full well. And that is exactly what Benjamin Franklin was talking about when he asked, when he was asked, I should say, by the local publisher of a paper in Philadelphia when he emerged from the hall after signing the Constitution. The man said, "Ben, what have you wrought?" Mr. Franklin looked at him and said, "A republic, if you can keep it." I have said many times over and over again on this broadcast that if you want to see what's wrong with America, if you want to see what's wrong with this country, if you want to see what has caused us to arrive at the state in which we find ourselves today, walk into your bathroom and look into your mirror, and you'll find that problem staring back at you now. See, the real problem with going back to constitutional government is that it cannot be done anymore. Number one, if the document was the document that we all believe in our hearts and that we hold up to the light as the ultimate in achievement, which it really is, it always has been, but if it really were, you see, we look at it in an idealistic manner which is not realistic. And this is what we must confront in our hearts and in our minds. You see, if the document worked, ladies and gentlemen, we would not be in the position that we are in today. The Constitution is the most perfect instrument that has ever been written. For the foundation of a government that would serve the people and protect the creator-endowed rights of those people. But it is not a perfect document. Our founding fathers knew that. They debated each article, each sentence, each clause, each word extensively for days and weeks and even months. And many compromises were made. If they had been successful in creating a document that was impenetrable, that could not be subverted, then that subversion would not have happened. To allow any tampering with the Constitution is to risk losing what it does protect, what it is successful at doing, what it has been able to create and sustain. Who do you trust to tamper with that document? Who would you trust to send to a convention to plug those loopholes, to make it stronger, to reseat it as the supreme law of the land? I can think of no one that I could trust to do that, to go behind locked, closed doors and debate and tamper with and change the document that created the greatest nation and the freest people that have ever existed upon the face of the earth. I don't believe that you know of anyone that you could trust to do that either. And if you did, it would be only your representative of your locale. And that person would be up against all the other representatives of all the other localities in the United States who would, of course, insist upon being represented in such an endeavor. So I'm going to tell you right now, to allow such a thing to happen is suicide. To continue without it happening means that those loopholes and those flaws that are inherent in that document will continue to be exploited. We have another problem with receiving the Constitution as the supreme law of the land, ladies and gentlemen. That is that most of you listening to this broadcast tonight, who claim that you are awake and love that document and want to restore freedom in your hearts, know that you cannot allow that yourselves, because most of you listening are dependent upon the government in some way for some portion of your income or sustenance or medical care, and many other things. And you're not going to give that up any more than all of you who scream that government is too big, that the military is too big, that things have to be downsized. And when they agree, and when we can get Congress to act and do those things, and they come to close the shipyard in your city, all of a sudden, it cannot be done. You see, because Americans, by and large, are spoiled. They will not bite the bullet and allow to be done what needs to be done in order to make things right. They will not give up the dole. At least 50% of the entire population of this country is over 50%, and many are 90% dependent upon government, social programs, in one form or another. There are some states where the majority of the population of the entire state works for the United States government in some capacity or other. Now, until American patriots and Americans in general are ready to confront these problems realistically and get their heads out of the clouds and out of dreamland, I can tell you for a fact, we are not going back to things the way they ever were. Because most of you listening won't allow it. And you are probably the greatest allies that we have. And there are many more problems with that, most of which I will not go into. Some of you took issue with the statement that I made that Bill Clinton has a clear field. He's going to be reelected, bar some miracle or some extremely charismatic person walks out of some forest somewhere that can capture the imagination of the populace, and I don't see anyone on the horizon that fits that bill. Do you? You say conservatives are going to band together and defeat the liberal socialists in the next election? I tell you, look at all the conservative or so-called conservative candidates that are running, and look how the boat is split up into so many fragments. It cannot be done. cannot be done. Look at the tremendous portion of the population who have been fooled, totally taken by Ross Perot. Look at the percentage of the population, and specifically in patriot organizations and patriot groups, that have been totally scammed and taken by Pat Buchanan, a member of the Sovereign and Military Order of the Knights of Malta, who owes his allegiance to a foreign power, sworn on a blood oath. Now, I had no idea what kind of Christmas cards this man would send out. None whatsoever. But I told you years ago who and what he worships. I told you who his God really is and what he represents. And you have still been taken by him. Go back and listen to the many broadcasts that I made revealing to you the identity, the dogma, and the plans of the mystery religion of Babylon, known as the Brotherhood of the Illuminati. Listen to those broadcasts, and then look at the Christmas card that Pat Buchanan has sent out to the voters and his, what he calls, constituents. On the front of that Christmas card, you will see the penis of Osiris, the obelisk, the phallus, the Ra, a ray of the sun, the lost word, so to speak. And around it is tied a great big red bow. The two loops represent the testes. The color red represents international socialism. When will you wake up? I didn't send out those cards. But I told you the meaning of that symbolism years ago. I directed you to publications, the books, the works of knowledge, and their own writing where you could discover the meaning for yourselves, and many of you did that. And you still have the audacity to send me a fax telling me that I'm wrong about Pat Buchanan. And I tell you that you are a fool if you believe that. You are lost in Wonderland, and if you are so lost, I cannot help you. I cannot rescue the blind. I cannot open your eyes and make you see if you will not. Ladies and gentlemen, I have fought in a war, and I can tell you there's no glory in war. There are no heroes. There's life and there's death. What I saw in my limited experience in war was some of the most unbelievable, most horrific, most inhumane things that man could even imagine to do to other men. Being performed by people who were raised in American cities and sent to church and were taught never to do such things. When they had the chance, the opportunity, they did them. Many of them would go out and kill all night everything that they saw, and then go back in the morning and pick up a Bible and preach to their fellow squad members or boat crews. It made me sick. It still makes me sick. I do not want to see blood run in the streets of America. But I understand also that that may become necessary. If an attempt is seriously made to enslave the American people, then we must resist, even if it means war. Mao Zedong, one of the greatest revolutionaries and guerrilla fighters that has ever lived, a great statesman, the leader of one-fourth of the world's population, whether you agree with him or not, whether you like him or not, he said this, and it is absolutely true. All power emanates from the barrel of a gun. He knows what he was talking about. When he came to power, the first thing he did was disarm the population so that he could control them. And we all know the means by which he controlled them. And the death squads, and the assassinations, and the purges, and the indiscriminate murder of millions of people. Because they did not have weapons with which to protect themselves. We must preserve at all costs our right to self-defense against anyone or anything or any entity which would destroy us. It is our right. It is the right of all creatures to defend themselves, even the lowest mouse that lives in the deepest swamp has the right to defend itself when attacked. It is a creator-endowed right protected by the second article and amendment to the Constitution. I can tell you just now, as sure as I breathe, as sure as I live, that the moment that we give up our right to keep and bear arms, the moment that we give up our weapons, is the very moment that we will become enslaved. By the very government that our founding fathers set up to protect those rights. I believe it is the duty of all Americans to own weapons, to practice with those weapons and know how to use them. I believe that any man or woman without principles for which they are ready and willing to die at any given moment that they are called upon to do so in defense of those principles is already dead and is of no use or consequence to anyone, not even themselves. I believe that it is our duty to belong to militias, legally and lawfully constituted and set up, not as paramilitary organizations, but as military organizations existing to enforce the laws of the Union, repel invasion, and suppress insurrection. For there is an insurrection taking place, and the laws of the Union are not being enforced. I believe that those who are trying to destroy us and enslave us and bring about a world totalitarian socialist government are fearful of the militias. In fact, I think they are terrified of the militias. And because of that, in accordance with the saying of Mao Zedong, which I know to be a great truth, I hate his politics. I hate what he has done to vast populations over his lifetime. But even Hitler sometimes spoke the truth. Because of these things, the militia has the potential of exerting a powerful political force upon what happens in the future. Because of this, the militias must become stronger. They must be well disciplined. The members of the militia must obey the orders of their officers. No one must speak for the militia except those appointed to speak, and they must only speak what has been decided by the leadership that should be spoken. Newsletters should be printed. You should get on the media whenever you possibly can. And I'm talking about those authorized to speak. And patriot groups should do the same thing. We must become a political force, backed up with the power, if we must use it, of the weapons that our Constitution guarantees that we have the right to keep and bear. But I tell you this, those weapons must never, ever be used unless it is absolutely necessary, and we must never, ever fire the first shot. Thank you.
friend. No one, not in my situation, can appreciate my feeling of sadness at this parting. To this place and the kindness of these people, I owe everything. Here I have lived a quarter of a century, and have passed from a young to an old man. Here my children have been born, and one is buried. I now leave, not knowing when or whether ever I may return. With a task before me greater than that which rested upon Washington.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Times brought to you by Swiss America Trading. Now, if you want to know what real money is, I suggest you get a copy of the Constitution and read it. This is another reason. You see, you think that there's something to save, and I tell you it's already been thrown in the trash can years ago. For if you read it and you understand that Congress and Congress only has the power to coin money, it doesn't say print bills of credit, it doesn't say make notes, it says coin money. It also states very clearly, no state shall tender in payment of debt anything other than gold and silver coin. And several other things. In the law, a dollar is defined as a specific measurement in weight and purity of silver coin, or the equivalent value in gold coin. The basis of money in this country, under the law, under the Constitution, is silver coin. The specific weight and purity and measurement is known as a dollar. Swiss America Trading deals in real money. There's never been a paper money system or a paper currency system in the history of the world that has ever succeeded. All of them have failed. All of them, during the failure, were marked by years of creeping inflation, which robbed the very sustenance from the work, the sweat of the brow of the people. There's never in the history of the world been a hard silver or gold metal coin monetary system that has ever failed. Because of this, I can tell you, when everything comes crashing down, and it will, those who have gold and silver coin will be the only survivors and will rule whatever market exists. And because of that, I urge you to call Swiss America Trading. Specifically, if you derive real worth and sustenance, information, education from this broadcast. If you do, you owe it to them, because you would not be listening to this broadcast without their support, I can assure you. Because I don't have the money to pay for all of this. I know that if Swiss America Trading stopped sponsoring us, we would be able to go on for a time, and I would begin to sell everything off that we own, just like we did one time before, in order to keep the broadcast going as long as we could. But unless we could find another sponsor, it would eventually come to an end. We need them, and you need them. And they need us, apparently, because they have been sponsoring this broadcast for many years, faithfully. And they've done many things to help us that you don't know about and probably never will, and I'm not going to begin telling you about those things, because I know that Craig wouldn't like it anyway. But I urge you to call Swiss America Trading at 1-800-289-2646 and get your hands on some real money. And do it soon, because time is running out. The target date for the formation of the New World Order, the One World Totalitarian Socialist Government, is the year 2000. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Time is running out. And I believe that we have sufficiently delayed them that it probably will not be a complete and total reality until sometime between the years 2010 and 2012, by my figuring. I could be wrong. They might bring it into existence by the year 2000. But whether it is cemented in place and they have all of the control that they absolutely need or not, the controls will continue to be put in place and freedoms will continue to be taken away constantly. We're involved in a great war, and battles are being fought all the time. And many of you are refraining from joining in the battles because you're waiting for the war to start, and I tell you it started years ago. I tell you, you will be truly sorry. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You know how you tend to procrastinate.
Dissatisfied fellow countrymen, and not in mine, is the momentous issue of civil war. You can have no conflict without being yourselves the aggressor. You have no oath registered in heaven to destroy the government, while I shall have the most solemn one to preserve, protect, and defend it. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passion may have strength, it must not break our bond of affection.
I'm going to read to you now a prepared statement prepared by an officer of the staff of the Second Continental Army of the Republic. This will be placed into a form and disseminated through the station's chief of the intelligence service of the different regions of the country to be placed in the hands of the commanders of the different militia units. If I don't finish it tonight, I will finish it tomorrow night. It's approximately 9 pages in length. It was not intended to be a policy statement, but was so good that it was submitted by fax to the commanding general today, who affixed his signature, and this is now the policy of the Second Continental Army of the Republic. There's a matter of great importance before us, which each individual will have to ponder in his own heart. The time of decision is at hand, and each person must decide for himself what is best for his situation, life, family, and so forth. There will, of course, be no wrong decisions because this is a matter for the individual. Some will continue to stand with us, others will not. To those who select another path, I wish you Godspeed and will continue to pray for your protection and success. These are hard times, demanding hard choices, and the crossroads of our future lies before us tonight. Those of you who heard William Cooper's Hour of the Time broadcast last night may be wondering many things. You may be wondering what hope remains for those of us who love liberty and have put our lives on the line to see it restored and maintained. You may be wondering what profit exists in the electoral process. You may be wondering about presidential candidates or the ambitions of the common law courts. In order to reach any kind of meaningful conclusion in those lines of thought, it is necessary to really stretch your mind to consider life beyond the present moment, something most Americans are incapable of doing. There are hard facts to face, and many of you may have to do a lot of research to determine for yourself that what I am about to set before you is true. I do not ask that you accept without question what I say. I would never do that. As I said before, these are matters for the individual heart and should be approached slowly and prayerfully because the time of reckoning is at hand. You should not reach your decisions tonight just because of some meeting you attend, nor should you fly off the handle and decide that everything set before you is baloney and unworthy of consideration. Take some time to think this through, make your own decisions, and then stand steadfast and unmovable upon them. We have all clung to principles and ideals which have been comfortable for us and have given us all hope. Some of those ideals are unrealistic in the political climate of the present moment. It is important to do a checkup from the neck up to make certain that your expectations are in line with reality. And there's a reason for this. If freedom-loving people go into the future with unreasonable or impossible expectations, and then those expectations are dashed to the ground by the reality that we are now foreseeing for the future of America, they will have spent themselves in the conflict and will have no strength to persevere and endure beyond the excited phase of things. We're talking emotional preparedness now, spiritual preparedness. Intellectual and physical preparedness are only parts of the issue. Those who expect instant gratification will not be able to endure. And that is an unfortunate trait of most Americans. Endurance is going to be the name of the game. Education and tactics will be even more important then than they are now, because some people who will eventually help us will not wake up until they realize that it's all over. I would not be inclined to refuse their support simply because they came late to the party. There will be a tremendous learning curve for them, but if they want to help, they'll have to go whole hog. They may have to accept some things and figure them out later simply because of the urgency of the times. But if they apply themselves, they'll readily see that it isn't really all over. The establishment phase will have just begun, and it may go on for years and years and years. I don't want them to give up just because they don't know any better. And I don't want them to give up just because we can't have life as we once thought it was. And I don't want you to give up just because the possibilities before us are unpleasant and disheartening. There have been people who have fought and died for this country who have faced worse, I can assure you. Life will be different, but it doesn't necessarily have to be hell on earth. It will be what we make it. We just have to decide what that is. Let's talk politics for a moment. Every person should support the candidate of his choice who seems to be the best person for the job. However, you must realize that political activism as it concerns the election process is futile. Political activism as it concerns issues is still workable and at times is still successful. The election process in the United States at the national level has absolutely nothing to do with the desires of the people or the outcome of the popular vote. Only at the state and local level do we really have any say, and even that is limited at best. Last night I told you that this next election will be the last free election that's ever held in this country. And that is true in a technical sense of what it is that I said. The truth is that we lost the ability to elect a president two elections ago, ladies and gentlemen. And it was cemented with Perot's move in the last election. And I can guarantee you that it will become worse and worse as time goes by. You can no longer elect a viable president who will represent freedom in this country anymore on a national level. It's out of our hands. When it comes to the presidential elections, the Electoral College has its influence, and the outcome of that election is predetermined long before the election year gets underway. An in-depth study of the Electoral College will reveal an unbelievable degree of corruption, where votes are bought and sold, and where votes which were aligned with the people are changed behind the scenes as a result of political wrangling and maneuvering, all of which is directed by powers outside of the Electoral College. In 1990, the Bilderberg Group met in Geneva, Switzerland, and decided that Bill Clinton would be the next president of the United States, and I announced that on this broadcast and assured you that it was not conjecture, nor was it a prediction. It would be fact, and I was 100% correct. Ross Perot was specifically recruited by the enemy to split the conservative vote to make sure that Clinton's manipulated win would not be too closely questioned by the public. He was successful. George Bush also knew in advance that he was not to be reelected. This is why he did not really campaign. In every televised debate, you saw Bush appearing with only half-hearted interest, if he had any interest at all, putting forth only half-hearted efforts. He had been instructed not to campaign too vigorously. When it appeared that Ross Perot might get too much of a vote and be successful, he pulled out of the election, citing threats against his daughter as the reason. When it appeared that George Bush might be getting too many votes, Ross Perot again entered the race. The American people were confused, but still stupid, and did not catch on. These men running for office followed their instructions to the letter, and the predetermined outcome was achieved while we all ran around chasing our tails, unseeing, unknowing, and totally in the dark about how these things really occur, being bamboozled and lied to on a daily basis by people like Rush Limbaugh. You do not have to believe any of what I just told you. It is documentable, and you can dig it out for yourself if you are so inclined. But it still remains that those are true statements of fact, and the outcome, regardless of what we believe, was exactly what the power brokers planned and had nothing to do with the desires or the votes of the American people. They have planned again for this election. The outcome has been predetermined. When you realize this, you are faced with a very troubling series of questions, not the least of which is, why bother? The reason, ladies and gentlemen, that we bother to support candidates in which we believe is because to do otherwise is to accept without resistance the enslavement and control of the powers who are calling the shots. We cannot take the defeatist attitude that it simply doesn't matter, and so we don't bother voting or supporting a good candidate. Supporting candidates and being politically active is part of resisting slavery. We do that simply because it is right. If you cannot elect Charles Collins to the presidency, what about the governor? What about the state house? What about the state senate or the state house of representatives? What about finding other Charles Collins to elect to all of the positions in state government? And then the state, being more powerful than the individual, can resist the tyranny of the federal government and the world government. Remember, the governor commands the National Guard and the militia. We must assess the degree to which we put our hearts and souls into a futile venture. Charles Collins is a great man with great political ambitions, and he has the support of most of the militias, but we have been cut off at the pass in this matter. Throughout the recent decade, the powers of the president have been altered and refined. Consider these things. No matter who sits in the Oval Office, he is the prisoner of the Secret Service, and they are not going to give up their power without a struggle. You will find that they are not listed under the organization of the Department of the Treasury. No matter who sits in the Oval Office, the political ambitions and desires for policy change are still controlled by the Congress and by the power brokers. The Congress, for the most part, is not fixable. It is not on our side. It no longer represents us. We can win certain issues in the Congress only to see those same undesirable proposals reemerge later in a new disguise attached to other legislation or hidden deep within pages and pages and pages and pages of fine print written on small pages. Undesirable proposals reemerge in new disguises attached to other legislation, and everything we worked for eventually goes down the drain. Remember NAFTA? Remember GATT? Remember the pledges of Newt Gingrich and Bob Dole? And remember what they did? Remember what they tell you when they are up for election and what they do afterwards? If you follow the history of disarmament policy over the last 50 years, you know this to be absolutely 100% true. Use your imagination here. Suppose for a moment that Charles Collins actually got elected. If that occurred, there are only two scenarios, and I can assure you this is true, both of which would probably happen. Within a month of his election, Collins would be assassinated. That would occur the moment he tried to remove the Secret Service and replace them with some kind of real security, preferably from the militias. If by some miracle of God, Collins did remove the Secret Service and replace them with the militia, civil war would break out throughout the country. The agents provocateurs who have infiltrated our ranks and are attempting to stir up trouble where none exists have been instructed to do exactly this. And in many cases, they are now active and succeeding in their plans. If Collins got elected and he was successful in remaking the cabinet, and if he wasn't killed within 30 days after the inauguration, he still would be at the mercy of the Congress, which has the power to stop everything Collins hopes to achieve. The only action Collins could take would be to organize a military coup using the militias, bring about the collapse of American government as we know it, and again we would have civil war. You see, everything that Charles Collins advocates is considered to be lunacy by everyone who sits in the House of Representatives and in the Senate today, and by most American people who have forgotten the principles and ideals upon which this country was founded, indeed our very roots that brought us the freedoms that we enjoy today, the ones that are left, that is. The majority of American people who are ignorant of what is going on and who have become dependent on government for life itself would be against us. In this final scenario, the militias are in that position of firing the first shot. It is a predetermined defeat. The militias cannot ever fire the first shot. It will guarantee that we lose the battle and the war. And who can say who would really rise to the top position of power following a military coup? A period of destructive anarchy would certainly occur, during which many of us would be killed, and eventually somebody would rise to lead. That absolute power has a truly corrupt influence, and we have no guarantees that when the moving and shaking was over that our new leader or our new form of government would be at all what we want. Ask the Russian people who fought in the Russian Revolution and thought what they would get would be completely different than what it was that emerged as the Soviet Union. Indeed, ask any people who have ever participated in any revolution in the history of the world. The only really, truly successful revolution that was ever fought was the one that brought this country into existence. You think the revolution in France was successful? Study it. Measure the depth of the blood that ran in the streets of Paris, and then tell me how successful it was. Look at the atheism and the lack of morals that exists in modern-day France, the home of international socialism, and tell me how successful it was. You cannot assume any success in such a volatile situation, particularly with the power brokers doing their best to fund and direct both sides of the conflict in order to achieve their own ambitions. So what can we do politically? In terms of the presidential election, not very much. In terms of political issues, a great deal. Of primary importance is the preservation of our Second Amendment rights. Only if we can remain armed will we have any means of preserving or regaining our freedoms or possessing any real political power today when it counts. If not now, at some point in the future. No matter what else happens, we must remain armed, equipped, trained, and prepared. Our future may be bleak, but it doesn't have to be that way for our children. We must preserve for them the means necessary for liberty to be regained at any time, whether we live to see it or not. That is the responsible position. Is this a hopeless situation before us? No. Not if you see the big picture beyond the limits of our own lifetimes. And if you study history and the struggles of other peoples, you will see that we really have a great edge for most of those who've struggled for freedom in the past history of the world did not begin possessing weapons. So when you consider the degree of your involvement in the presidential election process, it will be extremely important to determine how much strength you have, how much energy you can expend in that effort, and how much you will have left when it is all over, understanding that the candidate of our enemies is going to occupy the White House, and understanding that before you even begin. Your participation will be to influence issues. You are not going to elect your candidate unless you are voting for the candidate of the enemy. and most of the candidates running will be the candidates of the enemy. There will be a long period of endurance and perseverance which we will all face if we even see the next election occur. If you use all of your efforts and strengths in the election process, you may have no strength left to deal with what will occur afterward. Can you imagine Bill Clinton knowing that he has only 4 more years to serve and cannot and will not be reelected? He is the New World Order's man. Think these things through very carefully. Decide for yourself what your priorities are. Pace yourself with a view to the fact that we're now talking very, very long term. The hope of this country does not rest in the next presidential election nor in any national election. It rests in the hearts and the minds of the people. And what about our Constitution? What about our civil documents? This is the hardest thing of all to face and accept because the call for constitutional support has become an almost religious thing with people. But consider the reality of the situation. Even if we win on principle, there will be no return to the Constitution. It's dead. It has been for a long time, and you might as well confront that fact and realize it. Our country has been sold down the river in treaties that negate everything which we honor and believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. If the Constitution were enforced, we would be using real money. If the Constitution were enforced, our involvement with the United Nations would be illegal. If the Constitution were enforced, we would not have troops in Bosnia. The treaties, many signed in secret, reveal that we are no longer our own people. It's an unpleasant and shocking reality, but it is the truth. A study of our international treaties, which can be read and studied in any government depository library, paints a horrifying picture of the true state of affairs in the United States. People have not been ready to accept that fact, but it's been the case for many years. We still talk about constitutional restoration as if it were achievable because you have to work with people's hearts and abilities where they are at any given moment. But what is really meant is the preservation of the freedoms which will allow us, at some future time, to regain that which has been lost, to regain the principles of freedom on which this country was founded. We still have plenty of good, solid, motivated lovers of liberty who are only now gradually beginning to really see that in this struggle the Constitution is more symbolic to our cause than anything else. The term Constitution has become a form of shorthand that means a lot more than it actually is in political reality today. And as a concept, it stands for big things that we want to achieve, big, important things that we want to regain. But the Constitution itself is now only an idea, an ideal of principle to which we tenaciously adhere. It is no longer law. The treaties to which our nation has been obligated by our traitorous leaders have removed the Constitution from its position as the supreme law of the land. As law, it is dead. The Constitution has become a symbol of almost religious-type significance around which we stand in protective posture. The law may be dead, but the love and the longing for what that law meant and the practical realities of personal life must never be lost. Most American freedom supporters have not previously been ready to deal with that issue. Maybe they are now. It may seem completely defeatist to say that it is too late for restoration, but honestly, even if we enjoyed a period of restoration, it cannot really be total and complete. Our nation's populace has become too dependent to survive under a pure and undefiled constitutional republican system, and most have little, if any, experience in taking responsibility for their beliefs and actions. The bringing forth of freedom has always had many who die in childbirth. Too many people do not realize that most freedoms have already been lost and must be brought forth again. Only a few are ready for that labor. In this situation, the best that can be achieved is to hang like bulldogs on the principles of freedom, which will at some future time allow bigger freedoms to be regained. I do not see this occurring quickly or without tremendous casualties. The only real hope in my mind has been to try to work situations in such a way that some freedoms could be preserved. I've always thought that if even a smidgen of real freedom could be maintained, that tiny crumb would be enough to whet the appetite of those who will come after us. One taste is enough to make you crave more. Freedom is a strong and demanding addiction. And maybe, just maybe, someday others will follow who can do what we could not do. Yes, we must compromise. Yes, we must negotiate. The only way to preserve that smidgen is compromise. It's hard, and it hurts, and it's a heartbreak, but something has always been better than nothing. That something has got to exist, or it really will be all over for all time. If even some freedom can be preserved, eventually its beneficiaries will want all freedom again. That very real possibility cannot be discounted or ignored. To predetermine the total death of freedom so we can be comfortable now is totally irresponsible and would guarantee shackles for our children. It would destroy their hope, the hope that will motivate and inspire those who come after for generations to come, the posterity. We cannot do that, and the responsibility rests in the hands of our generation. Our generation. Our fathers let us down. We cannot and will not let our children down. You see, we could do what they did, sit back and say, we must trust the government. The government will not betray us. And hand our responsibility on to our children. I cannot do that. I know that most of you cannot and will not do that. True, there is no going back, and world government is eventually a certainty. Of that, there has never been any question. We always knew we could not stop it. The goals have been to delay its implementation until it could be organized with personal freedom at its core. Unfortunately, this has not happened and is unlikely to happen unless people get their heads out of the clouds, leave the gates of Disneyland, and confront the hookers on Anaheim Boulevard, look at reality, no matter how distasteful it may be, for it is, after all, reality. Good night, and we'll continue this tomorrow night. And God bless you all.
Conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggle here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly done. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.